WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We've had a little extra time around here this week as we've gone to do a bye week with the Ravens. I have been on my back and certainly on the IR or DL the last couple of weeks, making my way back here during the bye week. And we're getting back to doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're doing that presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be at Silver Spring Mining Company, Perry Hall, on the 29th. And we're going to have a full schedule ahead. We're going to be down in Fells Point on the 5th. We're going to be on the 12th in Timonium at Nick's Grandstand Cafe. And of course, on the 17th, we'll be joined by our mayor, Brandon Scott, at Coco's. Also at Fadley's. I'm wearing my Fadley's shirt. They were on with Al Roker this week on the Today Show. We're going to be there on the 10th, which is a Wednesday. So the Crab Cake Tour, we're doing some Wednesdays, some Fridays. Don, I have to make up, man. You and I haven't like done any radio in a little while. My back, I was on my back during my birthday and during that Cincinnati week. It feels good to be standing again and having you back on the program. And I know this is an important one for you because you've been trying to book this one. I mean, you almost booked this guy in baseball season. I mean, the World Series, you know, I mean, is happening. So
we'll probably talk a little baseball. Listen, Nestor, this is, I have been trying to get our next guest for about a year, talk a little bit about how I got to know him. But Kevin Lawrence is a social studies teacher up in Southern York County School District. He actually worked for a good buddy of mine, small world, former superintendent up there, Tom Hensley, and I grew up basically together in the Baltimore County Public Schools. And Kevin and I got talking as he was coaching youth baseball up there, actually coached my grandson. And I just have been fascinated with Kevin and his life experiences. And he's one of the truly highly regarded youth baseball, high school baseball coaches on the entire East Coast. So it's a pleasure to welcome Kevin Lawrence. Kevin, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Nestor, Mr. County Executive, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, don't call him that.
I've never seen you without a baseball hat, man.
I was going to wear it in this morning, but I thought the kids would find it a little bit odd that we were plotting strategies to get 270 electoral votes while wearing a baseball hat.
Kevin, I'll just say this to you. I knew a social studies teacher once who never taught me social studies. Don was my high school guidance counselor in 1982 at Dundalk High School. By the way, Johnny O is having me cut the ribbon with him a couple weeks from now at Colgate Elementary. So I'm very excited about that. Johnny O keeping his word. So I owe him some crabs over on the east side. But the social studies, what grade? Give me your social studies story, because when I hear social studies teacher, Don would tell you that when he was running the county and when I was running to lose my mind, when the other guy was running the country, I decided that America needed a social studies course, and I probably needed to conduct it and have my own. So I consider this, literally, Baltimore Positive, my own little personal social studies course because of Don. So what grade do you teach?
Well, high school, and almost exclusively upperclassmen, almost exclusively juniors and seniors.
What are you teaching these kids?
that's a trick question. That's a trick question. I spent 13 years growing up in the Catholic school system, and while I loved my experience and I wouldn't trade it, I think it exemplifies in many ways what we used to teach and what we ought not be teaching now. What we're really trying to teach now is critical thinking skills. I tell them straight up front, if you think you're going to offend me by differing from my point of view, you're wrong. Number one, I've got two children. They don't ever agree with me. So I won't know what to do if you do. And I don't care what they think. I only care that they think. And I heard it from my mom, or I heard it from my dad, or I saw it on the news, but I failed to corroborate it. Those are not acceptable answers in our society.
I learned that at 15 when I was in the Baltimore Sun newsroom. Like, that's my background. My background is who, what, where, why, when. Question what your mother tells you. Question what your father. Because my mother and father told me things that weren't true, for sure. Yeah, you know, so right. Santa, beginning with Santa Claus, right? So I would just say the critical thinking part, being around young people every day, I just can't imagine. I had a real difference of opinion with a lifer friend of mine, somebody very important to me, somebody that at one point I loved in my life, who was telling her children that the election was stolen. And at that point, I'm like, whoa, hold on. I don't even think about what adults think. When I start to think about what they're telling their children and whether their children may believe it, above and beyond Santa Claus and all of the true things Don Mueller told me about being the next Chris Thomas, I would just say that it's a very difficult position to be in at this point, right? Being with young people who come in with all sorts of opinions and ideas that when held to the test probably didn't pass much more muster than some of the stuff I made up for Mueller back in the 80s when I was a kid.
You know, I wouldn't describe it as difficult. I describe it as opportunistic. We as adults don't give our children, especially our teenagers, nearly enough credit. In fact, I just had this conversation sitting in this room with my homeroom students the other day. As Don can attest, our oldest son is 15. So he's into high school. We're doing the whole first high school girlfriend thing and the adjustment. And I said, is it fair? I asked my 11th and 12th graders, is it fair that as an adult community, we believe too lightly in the capacity of teenagers? Now, you know, the old loaded question thing, maybe I walked them right up to that, but of course they agreed that we did. And one of them said, what's that funny word that you always use? I said, is it nefarious? They said, yeah. They said, we do a lot fewer nefarious things than adults think that we do. We really are listening. So I wouldn't necessarily describe the situation as difficult as much as I would opportunistic, because we've got great kids. We've got great kids here. There are great kids everywhere. It disheartens me largely. I think the way that the generation is represented.
Kevin, talk, this is exactly where we wanted to go, and we'll talk teacher and then we'll talk youth sports, because I really want your perspective on that as well. Talk to our listeners. You know, we've had, if I'm thinking, Nestor, we had, you know, obviously we had my daughter on who was a principal. We've had that perspective. We've had central office administrators. We've had superintendents. I'm trying to think back. I'm not sure we've had someone who's actually in the classroom. So you're there, Kevin, on the front lines. Talk about today's teenagers. And I know that's a series of books, not just a small little podcast. But if folks are out there and they're saying, geez, I wonder what it's like to be in the classroom today. Talk to us about the kids that come into your class every single day. Who are they? What do they care about? What do they believe?
It's awesome, to put it in a word. It's awesome. You know what we were talking about this morning as they came in the room? We're talking about the fact that a lot of them who are attempting to either participate in supporting their family or accept responsibility for supporting themselves financially. And I don't mean as an emancipated or independent minor. I mean, they want to pay for their own insurance. They want to pay for their own gas. It's odd. Our kids don't want our handouts either. And they're frustrated because the local Chipotle can't stay open because they can't hire a manager who's consistently there to keep the building open. So they're being affected adversely. And part of the conversation between two of them today as they wandered in the room this morning was, what could we do in order to get more hours? And do we possess the qualifications to work in management at this age? So, you know, I think that if we gave our kids the credit that I believe they deserve and empowered them in the greatest way possible, it might be a little bit much for me to say that we're looking at another next greatest generation, but really the entire script has been flipped in the education world. When even I, and Nestor, I'm not entirely certain how old you are, but I'm two years younger. I'm 2 years younger than Don, so I know that we're close in age. But when I was in school, you went to school to gain the information from the teacher. Think about it now in our homes. How many of us hand the remote over to our kid and say, I can't figure out where the Terps are on the West Coast tonight. I can't figure out where the game is. And they speak to the remote and they've got it immediately. We've entirely flipped a generational script in which now adults can learn from children. And we can't only do that when it conveniences us. We have to empower them and then deal with the uncomfortable truths and realities that they unearth.
Kevin, it's so funny. When you mention that, I think of my five-year-old twins, my grandchildren, and they'll say, "Pop, I want to watch Paw Patrol." And I'm going, "I have no clue where Paw Patrol." "Pop, it's on Disney. Give me the remote." And the five-year-old is navigating, saying, "Pop, there it is." You know, so you're so right. Hey, Kevin, we don't want to get you in trouble with the powers that be up there in Southern New York. So make this global. What should we be doing more of in public schools across the nation that we're not doing? If you were king of the hill, if you had all the power, if you were the public school czar in the United States of America, what would we be doing more of that we're not doing?
Well, that's a trick question, because I think in our district that we are well on the path to doing it.
Give everybody an outlook on where you are, because you're not here in Baltimore, right?
No, I'm not. If you jump up 83 and scoot over the Mason-Dixon line and turn left, that's where we are.
Shrewsbury.
Southern York County.
That's exactly right. Shrewsbury.
Okay, so Luke Jones went to Susquehannock and lives in Shrewsbury. So, yes, my reporter is up there every day and spent most of his formative life in Shrewsbury.
Okay, and that's where I teach, in Susquehannock. And I think that we're well on our way to the things that we need to be doing. And that is, you know, the reality is, here's mine, okay? The reality is that when I started in school, and I'm not that old, but old enough, apparently, when I started in school, there was no internet. We went to the library, we looked up the old Britannica, you know, we had to be able to do the alphabet because they divided the M's in the middles and the C's and whatnot. And we looked up the information there. Today, we're all carrying a computer in our pocket. If somebody wants to know the day that shall live in infamy, they can look it up. You know, of course, we all know it's December 7th, 1941. But
I remember when they took the calculators away from us in math school, because like we had calculators on our watches, and like that was a big deal. Those things cost $20 and you could cheat on, you know, the answer was there. You didn't have to learn your times tables. You just popped into the calculator, right?
Right. And now I would argue to you that there's nothing wrong with not knowing 8 times 9. Now, my father.
Oh, my God. That's blasphemy to me, dude. If you don't know that 72, I don't. How the hell are you an adult? I had a guy to work for me that didn't know east from north, from south, from west. And then I started quizzing everybody in the office and nobody knew north from south. And I'm like, how in the hell can you function on the planet as a human being not knowing the sun comes up over there? Well, in this case, over there, and then sets in the west. And that you don't set your timetable, that if to get in the car from Baltimore to come to Susquehannock, I have to go north on 83.
Well, I've got to tell a story, Nestor, before we'll jump back to Kevin, but Kevin will get a kick out of this.
I went 0-6 in my building. No wonder WNST almost went out of business.
Another good friend of mine who Kevin worked for up there in Southern New York, Julie Sismazic.
My first grade teacher.
That's right. I forgot.
How about this, Kevin? Teacher. My first grade teacher, who I spent my whole life thinking didn't like me, came on a show last year, and like turns out she was fine with me.
Kevin,
I was just
Kevin,
a really
Julie,
tough student.
Julie Sismazic taught Nestor. That's what's wrong.
1974. I was 6 years old. Kevin,
Julie
do the math
and
on
I, that. North, south, east, west. Julie and I won't mention the teacher's name. It was one of the most interesting days. We were in a classroom doing classroom visits one day, and a teacher asked the class where north was, and they were confused, and the teacher pointed up and said it's up, Joey and I are looking at each other and going, what's that mean? It's up. The sky is up. And it Nestor goes back to the discussion.
No. I asked which way it was north. He said,
I just put the address
in here and I go.
I understand.
Get on the highway. You don't know what direction you're going in. I mean, what
I'm telling you is that we had this lengthy discussion trying, and a well-meaning teacher pointing out that directions, you know, are on maps. Directions are, as you said, north, south, east, west on a map. So, you know, on a compass.
Unless you're in Australia because they turn the planet upside down. You know that, right?
It's not up. So, Kevin, I hear you talking a lot about, critical thinking, and obviously that's a focus. Let's talk to your other passion and your other life. You've been a youth baseball coach forever. You're a high school baseball coach. Anybody who's watched you, and I've had the pleasure of watching you, knows that you're passionate. One of my favorite moments, Nestor, and my grandson who listens to the show will cringe, but when my grandson started to play for Kevin, which was a new experience, he wasn't happy that he grounded out at one point and he threw his helmet into the ground and he was scheduled to come in to pitch the next inning. And Coach Kevin said, nope, sorry, on a bench. We can't do that. Do you remember, Kevin? Remember that moment? We don't do that.
Now, how old is the kid at the time?
Well, I guess Jake was at that time, 12, Kevin, maybe 11?
I was going to say 13.
Over 13. And he had played, he played for a lot of good programs, but when he threw his helmet, when he crossed first base, as opposed to coming in pitching, he was like, no, we don't do that here. Get on the bench. We need another pitcher to warm up. And Coach Kevin looked up in the stands at my grandson's parents, Jeff and Sandra, said, I hope. And both of them said, do what you got to do.
Right? Well, he's got your name on the back of his jersey.
Teach him the right way. Where does all that come from, Kevin? In terms of your belief how the game should be played.
Well, it honestly has very little to do with the belief about how the game should be played and much more to do with my belief about how life should be lived. If I have a bad class second period, I don't have the luxury of walking out in the hallway and slamming my Chromebook and screaming obscenities. I mean, that's not an appropriate response to adversity. And I think it's entirely necessary in the interest of full disclosure here to say that if we were trying to fill up the bushel bucket to continue the crab cake tour from the beginning of the show, I could fill up multiple buckets with the mistakes that I've made in my life. So this is not coming from a position of moral superiority, of rectitude, or anything like that. But the trophies are going to go away. You know, my joke with my guys is that I coached the ninth pick in the draft in 2001. He signed for $2.3 million. You know, I'm a youth baseball coach in the Northeast. I used up my one first round draft pick. So if you're going to be picked in the first round, you're going to have to go play for somebody else because I've already used up all mine. So short of being able to do that, you're going to have to go out and be a functional father, husband, employer, employee, community member, et cetera. And there are certain ways that we conduct ourselves in society and other ways that we don't.
Well, sports is an awful example of this in the modern era, bro. I mean, like, my dad was you. My dad was a Little League coach. My dad hated hot dogs. My dad, you ran it out. You hit the cutoff, man. You played team ball. You played by the rules. You choked up with two strikes. You know, all of that, right? Like, and my last name's Aparicio, so I had all of that going on, too. But, like, modern sports, I mean, It's a video game now, right? The mugging for the cameras. They took the fans away and they put a camera there for everybody to come and we're not gonna taunt, but we're gonna do everything around taunting except taunt, right? I mean, I think kids watching this, it's more WWE at this point. let alone how they're behaving about getting a vaccine, which I can't imagine in 1982, Don let me into Dundalk High School without a vaccine. But like that's going on in sports now, too. So how sports behaves, it's probably a great example of how not to behave. Right. Like the Charles Barkley, we're not role models. Right.
Well, and that is, you know, it's funny you bring up the Barkley thing, because whenever I introduce myself in terms of a profession, I'm very clear to say that I am a professional educator. And the reason I use that phraseology is because we are all teachers. We are teachers to one another. My 11-year-old is a teacher to me. We are teachers to our peers. By providing an example and living in the collective space, we are teaching and instructing other people by our own actions. I am a professional educator. My job is to help young people assign meaning, or to more accurately, to find meaning on their own accord. This is the reason why we need coaches and youth mentors that are really deliberate about saying, because that was my conversation with Don's grandson. Look, I didn't sit you down because I'm angry at you. I sat you down for the same reason that I ejected a fan as a basketball official years and years and years ago, because your behavior is not behavior that can go without consequence, lest it repeat itself, and then it disrupts the fabric of society. I kicked the guy out in a third and fourth grade game because he waited till the place went dead silent, and he screamed, "What the hell are you looking at?" He wanted to come back in for the fifth and sixth grade game to watch his next grandson. The gym moderator came to me and said, "Can he come back?" I said, "Sure, let me talk to him." He came back. I said, "Look, I didn't kick you out because you yelled at me. I said, you didn't hurt my feelings. I don't have any left. I said, I kicked you out because you waited till the place went dead silent and then swore at another person in the presence of third and fourth graders. And when adults behave like children, children never learn how to behave like adults. So we need good youth mentors, which include coaches, teachers, youth pastors. It doesn't matter the forum, to be very deliberate about saying we don't throw our helmet because there is always a moment between the situation and then we have a processing second and then we have the reaction. And that's the reason that we built our program. Because when I started looking for a baseball program for our son, our oldest son, he was 8 at the time, everyone that I found, every travel baseball program that we found, had two fatal flaws, and most of them had both. Number one, they were either about recruiting the kids that could throw the hardest and hit the farthest, and we didn't teach the nuances of the game. So why would we sacrifice bunt? I have a nemesis locally who torments me and trolls me on social media at every opportunity about the fact that we teach kids how to bunt as early as 7 and 8 years old. We teach them how to bunt because, number one, it's a recipe to succeed in baseball. But number two, it is a way to understand that sometimes we have to sacrifice our at-bat. We have to sacrifice what I want in this moment in order to get something else grander for the team.
Well, later. That was baseball, right? I mean, that was part of your childhood, was baseball has all the elements. You know, you get the pitch, you get the hit, you get the field, you get the run, you have your turn, there's rules. They're the same for everyone. A strike is a strike, a ball is a ball, all of those things. And you know, that's why my dad loves sports, right? Like, that's probably why at 53 I've been successful, because I've taken the best parts of those elements. And when I haven't been that guy, it's come back to cost me in real life, right? And I want to go back to what you taught Don's grandson in that moment about that, because I'm not on Little League fields anymore, and my dad coached the league. We coached the team together many, many years ago. My kid played sports as a younger person. I don't play a lot of pickup sports, like, or whatever, because I haven't really enjoyed the company. I think it's hard to find 10 people on a basketball court that aren't trying to kill each other, you know, to find a competitive way. For little leagues and the modern era, a guy like me would say, oh my God, these parents are nuts. They're wearing red hats, yelling at the umpire that kids can throw stuff because the coach doesn't care or whatever. When you see all of this across the last 5 years, is it getting better or is it getting worse? Because social media would videotape all the worst behavior when the cops come and the guns come out and just think that that's going on in little leagues everywhere. But you played little league. Don, you've been at this your whole life. Is it, if I came out and experienced it in the way you do as a grandparent, is it better or worse? Well, my dad recognized it 30 years later, Kevin.
You know, there's a lot to unpack there. Let me first say this.
But it gets a bad rap is all I'm saying. It does get a bad rap because uber competitive parents and down in Texas, they're red shirting their kids to go to play 11-year-old baseball. It's nuts. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, let me give you a perfect example. People have occasionally said to us, you guys made a great decision to hold your older son a year because that's going to be really good for him athletically because he has a late summer birthday. He's August the 4th. And I said, yeah, you're right. That's exactly why we did that, because neither my wife or I ever competed in anything collegiately. And that was really our thought when he was 5 years old. Our thought was we wanted him to be as mature as possible so that when he was in the first grade and a young man exploded his little thing of hand sanitizer and it was all over him and it was a couple of days before Christmas break, And the hell is breaking loose all over the place because they're in the first grade and the holiday is coming up, that young man, our oldest son at the time, looked at his teacher and said, don't worry, I'll take care of this. Walked the young man to the bathroom, helped him get cleaned up. He was so upset that apparently Connor told him, don't worry, I'm sure your mother will buy you another thing of hand sanitizer. And if she doesn't, don't worry, my mom will. And that was the reason that we waited, not so that we could be in the situation that we were a couple of weeks ago when we were down in West Palm Beach with him to play baseball. And it's a 2025 freshman World Series. And it's the age is a non-factor. It's only the graduation year. Well, he may be a half a year older than some of the kids in the class because we held him because we believed that from a maturity and academic success perspective, it was the right decision. There are kids that have been, well, they haven't been held. They've reclassed once and twice and are 16, late 16 and 17 years old. And, you know, my issue with a helicopter parent isn't that they're hovering. It's the height at which they are hovering. They need to be a jetliner parent. And the reason for that is we don't need to remove parents from the equation. We need to help them gain perspective. Think about 9/11, okay? I worked in Washington, D.C. I worked in Wall Street. I had left Wall Street a couple of months prior to the attacks of 9/11. I had worked in the Clinton administration at the White House. Think about 9/11. After they cleared the airspace in D.C., they didn't dispatch an entire group of helicopters to run low-level air cover. They dispatched fighter jets out of Joint Base Andrews and any other place where they could scramble them in order to provide high-level air cover. And why did they do that? Because they were worried about an existential, large-scale, distant threat. Well, as parents, when we're helicopters, we're so worried about the out that an umpire called on my kid and now he's 1-for-2 instead of being 2-for-2. That is a lack of perspective because we're too close to the situation. If we're able to get in the jetliner and go up and have some perspective, what we can then appreciate is that's an opportunity to talk with our child after the game. Did you think the umpire made the right decision? I didn't, Mom. I thought that was a bad call. Yeah, I thought it was a bad call, too. So
how many more bad calls you're going to get in life.
Well, exactly. And when you get bad calls, what reaction are you going to have? But that requires the blessing of perspective. So it's not that we need to get parents out from over top of our kids, at least in my opinion. It's that we need to get them from the helicopter level to the running reconnaissance at a high level where we can grant perspective. Back in my day, when I was these kids' age, my dad called it wisdom, and I dismissed it then too. I call it perspective. It's the same thing, but that's what we really need to get back to.
We are with Kevin Lawrence. We're going to wrap up here soon, but I got a couple of things I've got to get to. Social studies teacher, high school coach, rec coach up in Southern York County, Pennsylvania.
What school are you coach baseball at?
Red Lion.
Red Lion. All right, good enough. Yeah. Don doesn't put things in notes. You know, Don thinks he's a good radio producer, but the things that like I would just ask, because it's the first time I've even asked, well, Red Lion, what's the team nickname? The Mighty?
The Lions.
The Lions. Red, okay.
Right, the Mighty Lions.
Oh, got it.
Kevin,
right,
where are you? There articles written over and over and over, and a lot of people commenting on this whole debate about year-round athletes. Certainly something my grandsons have faced, your kids have faced. Where do you stand on kids being multi-sport athletes? I think parents want to hear your perspective on that.
You know, that's a fascinating one, and one on which my opinion continues to evolve, because the recruiting process has now started a bit for our oldest son, and that is required.
He's a baseball player?
He is, okay. But he's also a basketball player and historically has been a football player. So I'm going to give you my general answer on that. The fabric that holds our kids' lives together are their relationships and their experiences. And every time they play in a different sport, they have an opportunity to spend more time around different kids, being mentored by different adults, and having new experiences. So if they're playing three sports, that gives them three sets of adults, three sets of not entirely unique sets, but certainly unique sets of athletes with whom they're working, with whom they're learning to deal, and three unique opportunities for different experiences. That enriches the fabric of their lives. The exact same way it
because
does.
Because they would have friends who played football and basketball instead of spending their whole life around baseball players, right?
Exactly. It's the exact same way that if my football player also wants to play in the marching band, is it inconvenient that my tight end isn't in the halftime meeting because he goes out and marches on the field? It's absolutely inconvenient. It's also entirely appropriate at the high school level. Maybe it isn't when they're dotting the I at Ohio State. Maybe it isn't there, but it is at the high school level.
I'll just say this. You know, I've had a lot of friends and relatives, and I'm getting a little older and have some more perspective on this now. I have a cousin who played tennis at a very, very high level, you know, had teammates, and she grew up in Southern California, you know, played Big Ten, all that. I don't think she's touched a tennis racket in 20. She hates tennis. You know what I mean? From having played it as a kid and surgery, like all of that, right? I would just say I and my kid's 37 and there are no plans for grandkids. I'm not going to be coaching Little League in my old age or playing golf or doing anything else. But I would say that for me and in my parenting experience, that when you stop liking something, when I stopped liking playing baseball, when I discovered girls, I stopped playing. But I didn't have a dad saying, "You're really good at this. You're going to get an education. You're going to get to go to Curly or go to Calvert Hall, or you're going to have a college." I didn't have any of that, but I can't imagine the investment when dads put batting cage time in and coaches and camps and all that. And the kid wakes up with a wild hair at 14, just says, "I don't like soccer anymore. I want to play in a rock and roll band, or I want to be an astronaut," whatever it would be. It wouldn't even be about sports, but I just think there's part of it where you don't know what you don't like until you try it. And it really does worry me. And I do think of, I don't like helicopter parents. I just think of the prick parent who has the kid who's the hard driver and the stage parent. Cause I've experienced so much of that in sports over 30 years of being here. And it's so unattractive to me, but it's also how the kid gets to Alabama. You know what I mean? That when they're 12, they get routed in that direction, because there really is in Texas, that's the way they grow them. And the competitive level of that and what colleges have done in regard to making this about a lot of money, it's so convoluted and polluted for me that I don't recognize it as what my dad did or anything that I even find to be appealing to some degree.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. Let me say a couple of things. Number one, We came back on Saturday. We drove 4 hours back. And by we, I mean my wife, because I'm not a particularly good driver. So she does the driving when we're together, lest I make everyone sick. So we drove 4 hours back from Reuther Glen, Virginia. We got back about 7:15, and at 7:45, both boys said, "Hey, can we go to the cages?" I said, are you guys kidding me? Like, you know, I just want to sit down. And they said, no, we want to go to the cages. So we went to the cages for 75 minutes, but we went to the cages because they wanted to go to the cages. And I understand that's not the way it is everywhere. Here's the challenge of parenthood. Very often passion follows dollars, and we're investing so many dollars in our kids these days that then we feel like we're entitled to dictate their passions. And that is unfortunate because, to your point, Nestor, those kids have to make those decisions. On Sunday, Connor could have squeezed in a trip to a college, but he didn't feel right doing it because he missed the first half of it because he had a Canes commitment with his fall team and didn't feel like just showing up for half of it was the right thing to do. And he's going to use the day to catch up on his homework. And oh, by the way, he's going to go see his girlfriend. And
it does get complicated right around 15, doesn't it?
But it doesn't need to be complicated. Those are decisions that a 15-year-old has to make.
What is a commitment? What's an obligation? And what's a choice, right?
Correct. And the only way that we teach 15 and 18 and 25-year-olds to make those decisions is by allowing them to make those decisions. And when we say, no, you're going here, you're not doing that, then not only have we weighed in heavily and put our foot on the passion pedal, but we've really deprived them of the developmental opportunity to learn how to make decisions and think critically.
Well, they also have to deal with the consequences of your decision, too. That's a whole different thing than the consequences of their own. Kevin, I've enjoyed the conversation. Don, we'll wrap up here. I mean, tell everybody how you know Kevin again and how Kevin wound up.
Well, again, my grandson had the opportunity to play for Coach Kevin Lawrence. And as I said, it's been truly an outstanding experience, and, you know, certainly framed him as a young athlete. Kevin, when we come back, and hopefully you'll come back and join us on a regular basis, I want to talk about your Clinton years. I've got this image of you like being Josh Lyman or Sam Seaborn, you know, in the West Wing. So you're gonna have to fill us in.
The Clinton years, Hillary or Bill?
Bill, Bubba, yeah. Bubba. So we'll have you come back and talk about leadership lessons from that. But right now, I know you have young minds to shape. So it's been delightful, Kevin Lawrence, up there at Red Lion High School, Southern York County School District. Keep up the good work, Kevin, and all the good stuff you're doing.
Mr. County Executive Nestor, thanks a lot for having me. I hope I can come back. We'll talk about the books that we've got in the works, too, that were the two projects that we're working on.
Can't wait.
You make me feel like he's mad when I call him Don. You know, now that I got to call him County Executive. Paul, thanks. Kevin, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Don, you and I are going to be getting together a little bit here. We're going to Fadley's. We have the Mayor at Coco's on the 17th. The entire Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery Let Yourself Play is available now out at Baltimore Positive. And I've risen up, Don. I'm standing, man. They thought they could keep me down for a couple of weeks, but I'm going to be ready to play after bye week. Absolutely. A couple of needles to the spine and some of the things you talked about in the beginning of the conversation, Kev, about the screaming out loud and obscenities and all that. That was last month. That's not November. We're gonna improve in November. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Have a great guest. Continuing our intelligent conversations, we call them wise conversations at Baltimore Positive.